direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
Spend together, and apologies to people. I said call early on the show. I didn't realize that there was a game tonight, but there was, and it's over now. You can come out and we can talk about whatever you would like, and we'll get to it. But Bob, who is keeping us on the air tonight, sends me the best links. I mean, he has no idea how important this is, because usually I think about the show about the time that David Jennings starts the news, and so it is that show prep is little and far between, but with so many articles, some of them are just great. 11 things you should never store in your car. And I have experience with this. And the first thing I thought is, well, let's see, is Clorox on the list? All right, I did it. Yes, indeed. It was a 1974 442 with a burgundy velour corduroy interior. It's actually, it was better than it sounds. It's very nice. And I had gone to the store, gotten some, you know, Clorox, and forgot about it for a while. When I finally got it off the seat, it had eaten a hole through the upholstery. Yeah. And I'd only had the car a few months, and I thought to myself, oh, well, I didn't like it that much anyway. It's time to get another Corvette. So that's what I did. But I to this day, in the mind's eye, I can see that ring that the Clorox made. So I'll add to the 11 things and say, don't put Clorox, at least not on the upholstery. The other thing more recently I've learned is John thought it would be a good idea if I was prepared for any emergency on the road, seeing that my Z28 has a few hundred thousand miles on it and over 30 years on the road. And I thought, well, okay, it sounds reasonable. Yeah, I should have thought, well, hermetically seal it first, because there was, it looked like a reasonably airtight container to me, but it was plastic. Yeah, fortunately, it was antifreeze as opposed to something else. But I don't know how to get the antifreeze out of the hatchback floor, because, you know, they glue that carpet to the bottom there. It's not something you can lift out. Like in other places, I've usually been able to remediate most anything I've ever done to the car, which is a lot of things. But this, no, it's together. And of course, it's no longer the case where you can suck any of it up with a wet vac. So it's just there in its greasy, slimy self. So if you have any hints on that, I'll take it. But adding to the list, aerosol cans, for the obvious reason, which reminds me, engineer Bob had just brought up, and I do remember this so well, the woman who called the cops because she had been shot in the head while she was driving, and actually it was her refrigerated biscuit package, you know, just, and I can see it too, I've seen those packages. Art supplies, they say, well, I can melt on warm days. Batteries, well, it'll negatively impact the battery as far as that goes, but they say that too much heat could also overheat the batteries to the point that they would burst, leaking corrosive acids on the interior. Yeah, well, that's probably next for me. Although, more recently, not in cars, but in houses, the number of houses that have burned down because of somebody's unattended charger is truly sobering. Yeah, I might have to rethink some of my habits. Glasses, they say, I don't know, I keep mine in the car all the time. And they say, no, well, if they're plastic, you know, in the heat, and you can imagine. They say, gym clothes. All right, now, what they mean is gym clothes after the workout. That's right. It gets fragrant after a while, no doubt. Oh, I can add to that. If you've gone swimming and you've been anywhere where there was chlorine in the pool, do not leave your bathing suit in the back of the car either without washing it, because a few weeks from now, I'll tell you what's going to happen. You're going to have absolutely no elasticity left in that sucker. It was my favorite bathing suit, too. I still miss it. Laptops, Well, I haven't had problems with that. However, apparently temperatures can overheat a laptop in as little as half an hour. And they're saying temperatures as low as 70 degrees. Are they kidding me with that? Yeah, well, bottom line is be aware. Medications, for the obvious reasons we don't need to discuss. I love important documents. I'd say the important documents such as your car registration and proof of insurance definitely should be in that car. Don't listen to anything else. But as far as other documents, maybe not, and probably definitely not the title. Plastic water bottles, I agree wholeheartedly with that. That stuff is just toxic. People who think they're drinking bottled water because it, in fact, is putting them on the healthy side, forget about it. Yeah, plastic water bottles, no. Sure, while you're driving, fine. But if you get out of the car and accidentally leave the bottle in the car, do nothing but throw it away after that. Yeah, and for God's sakes, don't refill it. Sunscreen, I have no experience with sunscreen. I'll leave that to you. And wine, well, I don't drink that either. But wine expands when exposed to heat. Oh, that could be very interesting. Forget about the flavor of the wine. If the cork pops out, yep, there you are again, all over your upholstery, but I guarantee it's going to be easier than if it was Clorox. All right, so that's some words to the wise for driving. We talked about driving superstitions last night. Now we'll talk about the contents of your car. We've just concluded that, and we'll take your calls, and Don is in Beloit. So, Don, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Hey, I got my phone fixed.
Good.
Yeah, I normally called you on another phone, but I used one that had just gotten rebuilt like literally an hour or two before the show, but the people didn't activate like the speaker microphone that you talk to when you're normally on the phone, you know?
Well,
microphone,
usually that's people on speakerphones, and that's one thing I really appreciate people not doing when they call this show is no speakerphones and no Bluetooth.
Right. So I usually do Wi-Fi calling to call you because it's just a lot smoother. But obviously, that was a mess. I told John about it, and he and I laughed about it. So I had so much that I was really enjoying your museums episode last night. That was so great. I thought I gotta call in and tell her about the National Museum of Bad Art in Boston because I'd been to it several times. And when you mentioned it, it just floored me. I was like, oh my goodness, that was pretty funny. Like minds, Raleigh, like minds think alike.
It's so bizarre, I think it's on most lists. You know, it kind of supplanted the Tupperware Museum a while ago.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I just wanted to call in about the Mustard Museums. I appreciate you doing a shout-out for that one, too, in nearby Middleton. It's just outside Madison. It's really, the National Mustard Museum is really eclectic. I looked up National Mustard Day is on Saturday, August 1st this year.
Appropriate. August is really bereft of any type of holidays or celebrations. So starting it out with mustard, sure, why not? It is the world's largest collection of mustard, don't you know?
Yeah. The patriarch of that museum, I think it's his girlfriend, has been the queen, or was the queen of that for many, many years. The queen of the Mustard Fest is a big, and we're talking big time here, Raleigh. So that is a very cute thing I thought would mention for your mustard night.
Well, you know, they sell mustard as well at the National Mustard Museum. And I really have to wonder who wants ginger curry mustard, but just in case, it's in the gift pack.
Right. There's mustard from every country in the world.
Right. And the things people,
like universal,
things people decide they're going to add to it for flavor, just know, Daddy Cook's exotic ginger curry mustard, please, this is a disaster waiting to happen.
Well, how about your sodium hypochlorite in the passenger seat? Eating a strong oxidizer, Raleigh. Eat your way through the upholstery. That's pretty funny.
It was so sad. It really was a nice car. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, I wanted to say I really, really enjoy going back to some of the things you did with Brazil 66 and that was great. Of course, I love them. Astrid and Stan Getz, her husband, right? That night that you played the two different versions of
Joao Gilberto was her husband. not Stan Getz.
I don't know how to pronounce it. I appreciate your help.
Joao, Joao, Joao. It's a fairly common, it's as common as John. It's just a common name. So
you definitely played the two best versions by far. Yeah. I saw her, as I might have told you, I saw her with some friends in House of Blues Chicago around January of 1999. And it was just so awesome to see her up close in person. That was a really great show.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, yeah. She was the singer most unlikely because she wasn't about to sing. Joie just said, get in here, you know, and that's how it kind of started. She didn't make any money on it either initially.
She just didn't get any money, right? It was just terrible. What a horrible situation, right? Yeah. Just horrible.
Yeah, but the early early Sergio Mendes, is long before Brazil 66, is my favorite stuff. When he still was dealing with Wanda de Sá and things like that, just wonderful stuff. It was the Sergio Mendes trio, and then they released one of the albums as Brazil 65 in America after a while, but it was originally the trio, and it was really, really nice. And his early stuff when he was even in his late teens were just terrific records.
He attracted so many great musicians. He just is like greatness attracts other greatness.
And he paid them.
I don't know. What do you?
He had money. Yeah, he came from money.
And then he married his vocalist.
Yes. Although she wasn't a prominent vocalist. It's not like he married Lanny Hall or anything, but yes.
Okay.
Yes, Christina, yes, absolutely. So
I want to bring up a topic that I'm going back. I'm changing the subject on you again here, quicker. But you went back to when you played. Is it Goodman? That Batman thing that was so funny.
Oh, Dickie Goodman. Yes, Dickie Goodman.
Dickie Goodman. Thank you.
Yeah. I used to hear from his son fairly regularly. And he lived in the Philadelphia area and was somewhat an investigative journalist, had discovered a lot of things that the government was just absolutely ignoring. But, you know, he'd call in the show and we'd talk often. And after he was done telling me what he exposed, I said, now let's talk about your dad. It was fun. And yeah, his latter stuff, that Batman thing, he did that with George Goldner, who was half of the inspiration for that, at least. And it was, I thought it was terrific.
I swear, Raleigh, you and John's stories, they always come back to Philadelphia. It's just amazing.
There's a lot there. But the thing with Dickie, Dickie killed himself. Shot himself and died. And so obviously John and Jed, the two boys, and his daughter Jane, but John especially really did not heal very well from that. And he has, as a testament to his father, released all of the Dickie Goodman stuff, and he's put it on all the download sites and streaming sites.
Oh. Well, I was doing, for this call, I was looking up Astrid earlier today, and just kind of going through her career again. And so I had no idea that she later, you know, just wanted to be a house, raise a family in suburban Philadelphia. Just spent most of her USA time, is that right?
Around Philadelphia. And that's true.
Ended up dying there a few years ago.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet up with her when you were there?
I met her, but I don't know her. I saw her backstage when she did a variety of things, like when you saw her in Chicago. She really did a lot of things around the country. And the last time I talked to her, she had appeared in Hollywood, of all things. And that would have been, 1991 would be about it. So it's been a long, long time.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, she just seemed like she really enjoyed just raising
She's very close to her son, and in fact, he went with her on a lot of the tours.
So. Yep. Well, I know this is a change in the subject here, but in the light of your Batman, did you ever, I'm losing my place here, but did you ever, where am I here? Those guys from Chicago.
I'm going to need more than guys from Chicago. It's a big city.
Tie your own shoelaces. Cheech and Chong's great thing. Oh my God, that was so funny. But I didn't realize that song was a parody for these Chicago R&B guys that were so good. So Basketball Jones was a parody of Love Jones.
Of course.
And it actually outsold Love Jones' spot on the Billboard. And it sold millions and millions, of course. But wow. So I was thinking, could you talk about that? Like the Love Jones guys, they're just amazing with that kid.
Love Jones guys. Okay.
Right.
Oh, man, that's what they are known as now, the Love Jones guys. All right. Well, why not? We will. I promise.
That'd be great to play both verses because I think it's such a brilliant, Cheech and Chong just did such a brilliant song, I thought, with that. But I had no idea. All those different people are on it, from Carole King to George Harrison. I mean, everybody. Ronnie Spector lady. What, I can't remember her name.
That is her name. It was Ronnie Bennett before she was Ronnie Spector. But Brighter Side of Darkness was, they were from Calumet High. And their lead singer, though, was not from Calumet High because he was only 12 years old. So they were unlikely. And I guess it was late 72, they released Love Jones. And
that kid could belt it out. He could just belt it out, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Daryl Lamont was the kid. Ralph Eskridge was in that group and a couple other people, too. But anyway, I'll have to look and see what happened to Daryl Lamont. Okay. I never thought about it before.
Right. Right. Okay, well, listen, thank you so much, and have a great, great show.
All right, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, all right, Love Jones, why not? All coming up on WGN Radio. Brighter Side of Darkness did something other than Love Jones, and there it was. Yes, I Owe You Love. Yes, on 20th Century in 1973. It's not memorable, but now you've heard it, and yes, maybe next hour or later this hour, hard to say, we will get into Love Jones and, of course, Basketball Jones. All right, but with that in mind, we're about to go to the news, but before we do, Victor called back from Silver Spring, so hello, Victor.
Hey. Yeah, I've been fighting restless leg syndrome for the last 2-3 hours.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry.
Just have to wait it out.
Yes, you're absolutely right, but what a pain. How annoying.
It is extremely annoying.
Yes.
But anyhow, I have a bunch of subjects to cover. The first one is the IBOC interference. I remember that.
All right, hang on. We'll talk about it after the news. Stay right there. We'll start with IBOC and move from there on WGN Radio.
Pretty little baby. Yeah, yeah. Pretty little baby. Yeah, yeah. Pretty little baby. You say that maybe you'll be thinking of me and try to love me. Pretty little baby, I'm hoping that you do. You can ask the flowers. I sit for hours telling all the bluebirds, the bill and coobirds. Pretty little baby, I'm so in love with you. Now is just the time when both of us are young. Puppy love must have its day. Don't you know it's much more fun to love while the heart is young and gay? to baby. I'm so in love with you.
WGN Radio, I'm Rolly James, and it says Stacy wants to hear Connie Francis. I think that was in December. But nonetheless, I figured, why not? Pretty Little Baby. She died finding out that that was a hit, which was news to her since she didn't remember recording it. Actually, it was on a fairly obscure MGM album from 1962. It was touting Secondhand Love, which is also not a big hit. But Secondhand Love and other hits, yeah, well, they were hopeful, but not. Secondhand Love and other songs, perhaps, and Pretty Little Baby was one of them. It did become some sort of an internet sensation last year for reasons that are inexplicable. And to this day, I don't know the genesis of who found that and why. You know, it's one thing, you know, like when her vacation comes back to haunt us or things like that, because they were, you know, they were quasi or in some cases absolute hit records. But Pretty Little Baby? I have no idea. All right, try to look up writer's credits and all that and see if maybe there were some family members hoping for royalties. But no, nothing really became apparent in terms of why. But there you have it. So hopefully Stacy heard her Connie Francis. All right, now we're back to Victor, who wanted to talk about IBOC interruption. And, you know, it just does not work on AM. And that's only one of the reasons. But yes, especially in the evening when you've got groundwave and skywave and utter hash.
Yes, and flipping over to the FM band, I'm not happy what's happened there. I remember getting stations in between stations, and during skip season, I got some really interesting catches, and the biggest catch of all was I pulled in a couple of stations from Newfoundland.
Yep, oh yeah.
And I sent it in to the National Radio Club audio service with Fred Volby, and he put it in a magazine.
Oh, sure.
And there was one Newfoundland station that didn't know the call letters, so Fred Volby, who was the president of the radio club, sent a copy of my tape to the worldwide TV FM DX club, and they figured it out that I got a station in Corner Brook, Newfoundland.
Yeah.
So there you go.
No, it happens. But, and actually, the Newfoundland DXers very often pick up U.S. radio, both WGN or like my little AM is a class 4 AM station, got 1,000 watts at night. But I'd say at least twice a year, I'll hear from some guy in Newfoundland or even better than that, the Scandinavian countries where they hear it. And it's just, it's odd the way things propagate. Of course, FM very differently than AM, but nonetheless, the reason that your FM DXing is not what it once was has virtually nothing to do with IBOC for the most part, compared to all of the low power stations licensed as translators. There is such a glut of them on the air that the bandwidth is very busy.
Yeah, that's really frustrating.
Yeah.
And another topic I wanted to cover, can I give a recipe for my favorite dessert?
I don't know. It's your favorite dessert. You survived eating it, I guess. Is this your recipe?
Oh, yeah.
Is this something you concocted? All right, let's hear it.
Okay, it's called cream cheese and Jell-O. Mm-hmm. And my mother used to make it, and this is what you need. You need to get a blender.
Okay.
Then you need to get a regular package of Jell-O, you know, the square box of Jell-O.
Right.
It doesn't make any difference what flavor, but I'll use lime.
Okay.
You need a package of Philadelphia cream cheese, the rectangular block.
And you need the original plain. You don't want to get, chives or anything, yes.
Right. Okay. Right. So then you make the Jell-O in the blender the way you normally make Jell-O.
Mm-hmm.
Then you add the Philadelphia cream cheese,
mm-hmm.
and then you run the blender for about a couple of minutes, making absolutely sure that the mixture is complete.
Mm-hmm.
Then you pour it into a mold, and then you put it in the refrigerator, and overnight it hardens, and boy, it is delicious.
All right.
And you can add whatever you want to add to it. My mother ruined it one time by putting some fruit cocktail in it. I just like it plain.
All right.
And it doesn't make any difference what flavor. It's still good.
All right.
I called the craft company and told them about it. They seemed interested. This is when they were pushing the Philadelphia cream cheese
right.
on their commercials for a couple of weeks.
Right, okay. Well, I think this recipe would probably be a big item of interest in the Jell-O capital of the world, which is Utah.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if your listeners can make it and tell me if they like it or not.
Well, all right. Well, we'll see if anybody comes through, and hopefully the kitchen survives and makes sure the lid's tight. Yeah, all right. Very good.
Okay, I guess I'll call in an evening. And
all right.
My friend Nick in Baltimore said he was going to call in tonight.
And I'll look forward to it. Well, thank you, Victor. Good to talk to you.
You take care.
Okay,
thank
you too.
You for having me tonight.
Oh, sure. Okay, bye. All right, so cream cheese and Jell-O, there you have it. You know, it probably tastes pretty good if you didn't wait for it to mold. That's the way I like Jell-O, actually, is don't wait for it to harden. Drink it while it's liquid. All right, so 888-876-5593. That takes us to David in Muskegon. What's up, David?
Yeah, hi there, Wally. I'm doing all right. Hey, I had a question. You was talking about audio digital band. Now, what type of receiver would you have to get to get
well,
that?
Well, you won't hear it in the United States because we don't broadcast with it. You've got to be in a country that has adopted it. And so Germany, France, Japan, there's a number of people who are on DAB Plus right now as we speak, and you'd be basically getting a receiver that was part of the VHF band because that's where Eureka 447 resides. But you won't hear it here.
Okay, now is there on the internet, is there stations in Canada that are part of the audio digital band?
Well, no, because Canada had approved it, and then when they realized the United States was never going to go for it, they rescinded the approval and they went to IBOC. So anything we do, they do. I'm sorry about that. I wish it wasn't that way, but it is.
All right, now what is IBOC?
In band on channel. Like I had said with Johnny last night, Eureka works so well, but the problem with it is that it took AM and FM and extrapolated it onto a third band, and that gave both AM and FM parity. Well, broadcast station owners here who bought the stations, the price in part was predicated on the stick value, did not want to see the lessening of their stick value with more stations that would be of equal coverage, i.e. the AM stations that would be on the same band. So they all said, no, we are not moving. So they came up with, the guy who was head of the consortium was a very nice guy, Glenn Walden, who I knew from 55, 60 years ago in Miami. But anyway, they came up with the concept of doing digital audio on the AM and the FM. Now, on the AM band, by the way, I don't care what anybody says, it doesn't work. Not well enough to matter. But on FM, that's where you see what they call FM HD, and they have like FM 2 or FM 3, where they're splitting the channels that way. That's all part of IBOC. And for a while, that was being administered by Ubiquiti. And they sold it several years ago, and for a pricey amount too. So it's not Ubiquiti anymore, and that's pretty much what it is. You got to be licensed to do it, obviously, and you have to have the equipment to do it. And then you can take part of your signal and parse it down and get an HD2 or an HD3. Now, when the FCC approved this originally, the whole thought, the impetus was that, well, we'll have more stations that will be able to be of interest to niche groups and other communities. And that sounds so good, doesn't it? Well, unfortunately, they allow HD2 and HD3 to originate programming. So what that means, if you haven't figured it out yet in your mind, what that means is, let's say you have a translator and you want to translate your station, but your station is licensed in such a way that you're not within the contour that could allow you to put a translator on the air where you wanted it. Well, hell, just get somebody who's there, pay them for their HD2 or HD3, put your signal on that and translate that. Voila, you're in the market you want to be in, even though your station isn't. Well, that's so addictive and appealing that what was supposed to be niche format of, you know, this music or the psychic channel in Detroit, or they did that on CBS, or things like that, gave way to, hell, we'll just lease our HD2 or HD3 to people who need the coverage, because it's a loophole. And I contend that translators should not be able to translate HD2 and HD3.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is.
The low-powered stations, to me, I would not cry if they went away.
Well,
and I'll be honest about it, because it does away with the value. It does away with the value of the stronger FM stations.
Not exactly.
On that same frequency.
Well, not
in a different city.
But remember, you're not licensed to be in a different city. But translators and low power FM are not going away. Period. But
no.
But I wish they would change the rules that you could not consider your originating station to be an HD2 or HD3, because it's a loophole that gets you where you don't want to be. But no, they're not going to be protecting a frequency that is uber distant to another frequency. That might be your hobby and that might be interesting, but there's no way they're going to protect that.
Yeah, because like here at Muskegon, all they do is play music. It's a low-powered station.
Yeah,
106.1, and that should not be.
Well, no, wait. Now again, when you say that should not be, if it's a low-power FM, it's designed to be non-commercial. It's designed to serve small aspects of communities. Its original purpose. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it when it's used in that way.
Yeah, it's all automated.
Unfortunately, a lot of it is.
There isn't any jocks, mm-hmm. because the original concept of the low-powered stations was they were supposed to serve the community.
Right, serve communities.
You know, community service programming.
Right. Well, they don't.
And this one does not.
Most don't.
And I've noticed that.
Most don't.
Yes, and this is my problem with it.
Mm.
And so, you know, and it crowds out, let's say, here without that low-powered station, I'm able to get 106.1 out of Lansing.
Yeah, I know.
And Michigan, Q106,
well,
and over the air. I can get it, sure, on my Alexa, but all these low-powered stations, to me, that they ought to go away.
Well, they're not going. Well, they're not going
they're not.
To. They're not going
yeah.
to.
The FCC ain't going to be doing it.
No, they're not going to.
The most
you could hope for, and don't hold your breath, would be that they would enforce the concept that they needed to be of public service, that they needed to serve the communities. But that's not going to happen either. But you've got a much bigger problem on FM with translators than you do with low power stations.
Them translators.
Yeah, translators are a whole different world.
Oh yes, they got a translator in Grand Rapids for AM 1300.
Well, most AMs these days have, if not a full FM station, a translator. Unfortunately, and some of the truly great AM stations like 50,000 watt KFI. If you listen to that, they don't say they're on 1070 AM. They'll tell you very quickly they're on 96.1 FM, because for the most part nobody is promoting AM. AM anymore. It's sad but true.
Yes, because I remember when the AM and FM had to be separated.
Well,
at first it was in the large market.
No, also you remember when it didn't. So it's gone through a lot of things, but they are separated from the standpoint of they're not. Well, that's a long discussion, but the bottom line is you're not going to lose low power stations, and the likelihood that you lose translators is probably nil, but it would be nice, as I say, if they wouldn't allow HD2 and HD3 to be the primary source. But we'll see.
I don't so much have a problem with the HD2s and the HD3s as these translators.
Yeah, but you don't understand. A translator cannot originate programming. Cannot. Illegal. Cannot originate. It has to get the programming from somewhere. Cannot originate it. Well, if it's translating something that's not in the area they want to cover with the translator, they need an HD2 or 3 to get that signal on the air. Translators yes. don't originate. So that's the tie-in. But anyway, I think we're all fighting a losing battle. But it's fun to talk anyway.
I agree with you because the way the FCC is configured and everything, and this has been for several administrations.
Well, wait a minute. Remember, most of the stuff you're complaining about actually was an FCC decision. It was a congressional decision because of the Telecommunications Act of 1996. So don't take Congress out of that equation. And I will talk to you later. All right. So that's where we'll leave that. So indeed. 888-876-5593. We got Sam and Gurney. We got Eduardo in Tampa. And hopefully you two right here on WGN Radio.
Take my hand, I'm a stranger in paradise, all lost in a wonderland, a stranger in paradise. If I stand starry-eyed, that's a danger in paradise for mortals who stand beside an angel like you. I saw your face and I ascended out of the commonplace into the rare, somewhere in space I hang suspended until I know there's a chance that you answer the fervent prayer of a stranger in paradise.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and I know you. What are you playing now? Well, 1953 on Capitol, Gordon McRae, Stranger in Paradise. And here is the deal. I've had this on my desk for now going on 2 months. Laura in Willowbrook requested that. And she sends wonderful things for trivia and all of that. And I thought, well, eventually I'll get up the courage and I'll play Gordon McRae. And this was the moment. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Sam is in Gurney. Hello, Sam. Welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Raleigh. I hope you and John are doing great.
We are here. And how about you? And how's the grandkid? And any news?
Well, there is news, but it's not anything I can share at this point, so I'll just, okay. As soon as I can, I will definitely get you informed.
All right, good deal. So what's up?
Yeah, thank you so much. I was calling because, in all due respect, I just wanted to totally disagree with your prior caller about the low-powered FM stations, because in our county here, I'm in Gurney, but in Round Lake Beach, there's a studio, 98.3 FM, The Life, and they couldn't be more community supportive. Entertain the police and fire departments and broadcast the best of news, and they have multiple DJs and multiple programs. And while I admit that they do have pre-programmed music and such in between there, the programs that they do play couldn't be more beneficial to the local community. And that's pretty much the sum of what I wanted to call for.
And I would absolutely agree with that. And that's RLR. And they have been named one of the top low-power radio stations in America, Tech Finds and all that. So there are a number of them that do. But far too many locally don't. But yeah, a station like that is doing exactly what it should be doing, and I'm glad you get to hear it.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much, and thanks for allowing me to give my 2 cents.
Absolutely. I'm glad you called. Talk to you soon. Thanks. All right, and
all
on
right,
that note, we will find out what's going on with the world at large and pick it up after the news on WGN Radio. Thank you.
What's happening, baby? Did you miss me over the weekend? If you did, I'm sorry. But now that I'm here, I don't want to bore you with a long, irrelevant conversation. But you see, doll, I think it's about time for me to get real serious about you. Because if someone was to rip me off of you, I couldn't account for my actions afterwards. And the way I feel, knowing that you should have been mine all the time. But you see, I not only want you, baby, but I need you. And the need is so strong, it's almost like that of a junkie. In other words, baby, I just got to have you. Listen to me, darling. Please, listen to me.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Was on 20th Century, and it got up to number 15 nationally, and a pretty forgettable. It was certainly a Chicago record. Kids were from the Calumet area, and their only real hit, Brighter Side of Darkness, was one of Ed Cody's studios, and Ed engineered it. But I think it would have been entirely forgotten, maybe not by certain parties in Beloit, but but everybody else. However, I think Cheech and Chong immortalized it, whether we wanted to or not.
Basketball Jones, I got a basketball Jones, got a basketball Jones, oh baby, ooh. Yes, I'm the victim of a basketball Jones. Ever since I was a little baby, I always be dribbling. In fact, I was the baddest dribbler in the whole neighborhood. Then one day, my mama bought me a basketball, and I love that basketball. I took that basketball with me everywhere I went. That basketball was like a basketball to me. I even put that basketball underneath my pillow. Maybe that's why I can't sleep at night. I need help, ladies and gentlemen. I need someone to stand beside me. I need someone to set a pick for me at the free throw line of life. Someone I can pass to.
Painful, downright painful, and timing is everything, and probably as important in timing as location. And if you're going to do something at A&M Studios, and you happen to have a producer like Lou Adler, who's producing other things simultaneously at A&M Studios, you're going to wind up with a lot of people in your session. Yeah, that's true. That's exactly how it happened. Yeah, Adler went to one of the other studios. Hey, come here, hear this stuff. So yeah, George Harrison and Billy Preston. And in fact, it was Carole King's highest peaking single on which she appeared during 1973, which explains everything you need to know about Carole in 1973. The Blossoms were on it. Michelle Phillips from the Mamas and the Papas. Yeah, they were the cheerleaders and all that. And so initially it was just Cheech singing and Tommy playing piano. And then here's George Harrison and those guys in the next studio. So Adler is tickle-picked by this and just runs over, plays it for them. And they came up with the track right on the spot. And it wasn't a thing where Adler called anybody in or invited them to be part of it. They were just there. And so there were, like I said, Billy Preston and James Keltner was there and Nicky Hopkins. So it was an all-star cast, including Darlene Love, of course, one of the Blossoms at the time, and Sister Mary Elephant. Yeah, gotta have her in the mix. And yes, and you know all about that. So, all right, that's the deal. I'm not 100% sure why Don wanted to talk about it, but that's really about all I can say. So there's animation too, and Shoelace is shown drooling among other things. Yes, his skill for dribbling. Right? Oh, man. All right, well, there you have it. 888-876-5593 is 8888-Raleigh. Eduardo is in Tampa. Welcome to WGN Radio. Eduardo. Have we lost Eduardo? Oh, he's going to tell us about the pediatric convention. Yeah, I hope he hit some of the hospitality suites. Yeah, those pharmaceutical companies tend to give you a nice time at those conventions. Karen and Madison, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you?
Okay. I'm doing fine.
Good.
Do you think you could tell me what it means when my IP is exposed? Does that mean anything to you?
Well, yeah, I guess to an extent everybody's IP is exposed, but that's the address on which you are depending for your network connectivity, your internet connectivity. So
that would be my router that
I own. See, okay, here's,
right?
Are you talking about a phone or a computer here? What are we talking about?
I don't want to. I'm so anxious over this.
Well, yeah, no, you don't.
I don't want to get too far.
Right, but these are basic questions.
I have a laptop.
All right. Okay.
I have the internet.
All right.
And my own Wi-Fi.
All right. Okay. All right. So if you've got the internet
and a phone,
yeah,
home phone.
Fine.
And no more.
Right. Okay. Right. That's VoIP. Okay. So you're getting your internet connection from your cable company, who's offering you bundles. They're offering you the telephone service, and they're offering you TV if you want it, and all that. Right. That's your deal. Okay. They have given you
yes.
Yeah. They've given you an IP address, but it is unlikely to be a static address. It's most likely to be DHCP. What that means is it will change. And it's fairly common. And having that quote unquote exposed, what did you get some warning on your computer or something?
I never signed in, and
fine.
I don't want to give you more, I don't want to take, I never really signed in to Windows.
Fine.
Got it.
There's nothing to do with that.
It's AVG.
Okay.
A free virus thing.
No, it's garbage. Just get rid of it. Ignore it.
Yeah, because it feels like they're scaring.
Well, they are scaring you. Yeah, right.
Down and
they are scaring you. Ignore it. Just delete, delete. Don't answer. Whatever you do.
Everybody can see everything you're doing. Everything.
Well, firstly, that's probably true anyway, but no.
It's probably true. I listen to WGN, and they'll say,
All right. As long as you listen to me.
Nothing.
Calm down. Calm down.
Thank you.
All right. Now listen. Yeah. Number one, calm down, and now listen to these words, okay? Are you with me?
Right.
Ignore any notices you get like that. Just delete them, whether they're on your phone or your laptop. Ignore it.
Okay.
That's it?
I do.
That's all there is to it.
Okay, so basically they're just I don't clear my browser's cookies and all that, and that creates junk, and I
Well, you can't, you can clear it if you want to. As far as that goes, but
I don't know a lot,
but
and so it just is slowing me down. But to sit there and
every single time
you turn
right.
it on,
yeah, that's right, right, because it's got a you've got a little piece of malware in there.
They're going to sit there. Got it to
if
begin
you,
with,
if
but
you,
they're trying to get money, and they're
yes,
just trying to.
You're not listening. If you are uncomfortable with seeing these pop-ups repeatedly, go to somebody who will clean it for you. If you don't feel comfortable doing it yourself, you've probably got a very little piece of malware on that keeps popping up, and they're praying to God that you're going to react. But you're not going
to
react.
I'll go back to the person who put it in there because he thought I was scared.
Okay. And, all right. So wait a minute. Wait. You see, you keep giving me additional information here. If you're saying that someone put an antivirus program on your computer and you don't want it there, just get rid of it. Tell them to remove it. That's all there is to it.
Okay. Thank
right.
you.
Yep.
Thank you very much for that.
Don't worry about it. All right.
I'll
Don't
keep it very simple, and I hope you have a very nice weekend.
Well, you too. Don't ever answer anything you get online.
I don't.
All right.
That's why when you say everybody's got to learn, and I don't want to be hard on Jim. I just can tell it's just hard to be old and have to learn all this.
It's up to
and
you.
That's all I have to
No,
say.
It's
I'm
completely
trying.
Up to you. You could if you want to, but if you don't want to, don't. All right,
I'm
good deal. Get rid
Thank
of it.
Thank you.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks
yeah.
a lot. For
yeah.
your
My pleasure. We're all old dogs. Most of us don't like new tricks, but the bottom line is there are times you got to learn. And if it is impeding you in some way, yeah, you'll learn it. And if not, very good. It doesn't sound to me like it is malware from what you just said at the end. Somebody put a virus program on there, and so it's, it wants to upsell her for one thing, but giving her all sorts of stuff. But no, as long as you don't react to anything, that's fine. But whatever you do, don't react. All right, because there's no shortage of email and other things that will scare the hell out of you, and you'll think, oh, I better write. No, you don't have to do anything. If you hear about all the scams, and you hear story after story about people who have literally lost everything, it is as sad as it gets, but I've yet to hear one that didn't start somewhere in there that they responded in some way. All right, so that's the key. And if you ever get anything on your phone or on your laptop that looks like it is legitimate from a bank or whatever, still do not react or respond. But if you're wondering, get your credit card if it's a credit card or your bank statement if it's that. Call the number on it, not any number that's given to you in these crazy emails or notices. Call the number that you have obtained on your own and ask if it's legit. And you'll probably find out 99% of the time that the answer is no, it's not. But if you're thinking, gosh, this looks really legit, don't respond, no matter what. And don't call any number in their notices, no matter what. Even if it looks like the exact number you're supposed to call. Get out your bank statement or your credit card and only call the number on it. It's just that simple. And as I say, I've yet to see the story where when I didn't start scratching through the details, I didn't come up with in some way, they contacted the scammer in some way. So don't do it. All right. 888-876-5593. We'll get to Gary and Austin and you two coming up on WGN Radio.
Have been fooled by you. I suppose that the number is far from being small, and I'll bet that I'm the biggest fool of all. If I guess I'd do it all again. I'd go down that same old road, even knowing at the end you'd leave me when your heart hears a new love call. So I guess that I'm the biggest fool of all.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is for Cindy. Cindy requested that a few weeks ago, and we finally got around to it, and hope she heard it. Gary is in Austin. Welcome to WGN Radio.
I made that.
Well, hey, Raleigh. I was just going to say to Karen, just delete. Your delete key is your friend.
You're so right. And you know what? It's interesting what she said at the end of, I'm going to go back to the guy who put it on there. It sounds like someone put an antivirus program on there, and it's being a little aggressive with her, trying to upsell her.
Right, yeah. I just use my Windows machine. I just use, what is that, Windows Defender.
Yeah, what's on there exactly? And that's as good as any.
And, you know, and they have good, you know, reports and stuff. But I was just thinking about IDs. Do you think stations should really keep doing IDs? Or do you think the ID is...
I don't think there's a reason to get away from a top of the hour ID, so that people know who you are and where you are. It's not intrusive, and it's not a hindrance to anybody. So yeah, if they only want to do it once an hour, that's fine. But I think giving some ID is a good idea.
I was trying to remember when they went from two IDs an hour to one. I think it was sometime in the 70s.
I don't remember it in the 60s.
Yeah, because I think in the 60s you had to do an ID on the hour and half hour, and I think up into the 70s, but I was just trying to think when that was. I think it was maybe 73 or 4, maybe.
Yeah, see, I remember, you know, sadly, working in the 60s, and very often there was a bottom of the hour ID, but it was by virtue of the fact that they were running two newscasts, the places I was, you know, at that
yeah.
Because they had to yeah. run one, you know, that was required, but some would run two. But I don't remember it being an FCC mandate.
Huh. I remember the first time I heard a one ID, and I was listening to my local top 40 station on 98.7 in those years, and
right.
the bottom hour came and went, and there wasn't any ID. They just, you know, kept doing formats. So I wonder why they missed the ID, and then I heard it after that a lot. You know, so okay, they must have changed the rules or something. But I was just, and that was, you know, a few, maybe 50 years ago or something.
Yeah, I'm aware of what the requirements are, and a lot of people don't know what the requirements are with regard to your call letters, and that must be immediately followed by your city of license, you know, as far as that goes. You know, as far as that is. But I do not, all I knew is it had to be at the beginning and ending of any broadcast for stations that were on just during certain hours, you know, going back to either
right.
daytimers or whatever. And other than that, it was to the closest to the top of the hour as possible. I absolutely do not remember bottom of the hour. So that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now the fact that you remember it, you know, I'm thinking, okay, so let's try and see if I can find anything, and I probably won't tonight. But you know, now I've got my homework cut out for me. I'll start
yeah.
looking online to see if I can find this, because I just don't remember a regulation that said I had to. The only one, like I say, was closest to the top of the hour as possible. There was no set rule that it had to be within 2 minutes or something like that. But ultimately, especially if it was someone running network news, it was going to be at the top of the hour. But, you know,
yeah.
of course, it's completely different rules for translators and all of that. There you're only doing it three times a day. But, yeah, bottom of the hour. Okay, I want to know. All right, because I know the rule that covers this, and I don't know why I have to know this, but 73.1201 covers that. But I will look, and John says, shut up, it's time for the news. So I will talk
yeah,
to you later.
Okay,
okay, bye.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
All right, good deal. No ID needed on WGN Radio.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
This is a big party, man.
Yeah, brother, dig it.
Stop
right on.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
headlines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
Requested that a while ago, and happy to play What's Going On 1971. Yes, indeed. 888-876-5593. And so Bob said, well, the internet's not helping me, and actually it's not helping him with regard to the history of station identification, because there is nothing in any of the regulations that I can find that mandates half the hour IDs. And this actually, mandating any kind of an ID, goes back prior to the FCC's formation, back when the Federal Radio Commission was formed in 1927. They adopted that requirement that stations had to identify themselves regularly. And typically, that was at the beginning and the end of each broadcast hour. And at the time in 1927, that literally might have been it in terms of the program. An hour here, an hour there, and all that. And so the purpose, obviously, was to identify the station and its community of license, because that would be a way to monitor compliance and public interest and all that. So in 1927, they added sponsorship ID, which, of course, that was retained in 34, and that's really important because, of course, part of the Plugola issue years later came because this was violated, required that any broadcast material paid for by a sponsor must clearly be disclosed, especially if it's commercial in nature. And you see that now when on television or on radio, when it's an infomercial or whatever, it absolutely is identified. Then in 61, they strengthened that primarily because there had been a loophole whereby disc jockeys could take all the payola they wanted, and there was no rule against it. That's true. There was none whatsoever. Not reporting out on your income tax could get you, and that's how some people got in trouble. But as far as doing it, the licensee couldn't do it, but the employee could. So they added a section in the 500s to the FCC regulations, and you know, now if you were an employee, you couldn't do that. The other one, the plugola, is interesting because bottom line is if you're taking something of financial value from an advertiser, you've got to identify it as such, much like the music. So anyway, they did that, but you get to the 80s where they're relaxing a lot of rules. Now, in terms of station identification, it still is the top of every hour, you know, or the bottom of every hour, the end of every hour, beginning of every hour, you know, the once an hour deal, but also the beginning and ending of any broadcast. And so that was interesting. But the big deal is, always was, always is, probably always will be, the ID must consist of the call sign followed immediately by the community of license. So you can go ahead and put things before the call sign, like Chicago's greatest hits or whatever you want. You can put anything after the city of license. But man, when those call letters happen, the next thing out of your mouth better be the city of license. And that's just that's the regulation. And so it's interesting because as FM began to rise in the 80s, what you really started to see was, especially with Docket 8090, where FM stations from outlying communities could move into cities. But, you know, you'd wind up, it's a Covington, Louisiana license, but they're covering New Orleans. Or in the case of New York, it's a Newark license, but it's covering Manhattan. Now, so here comes Z100. Mallright had bought it, and they're going to go top 40, and they got to idea. Well, they don't want to have to say, you know, WHTZ Newark, but they have to. They might not want to say it, but they have to. So what they did was they did it in such a way that it was WHTZ, Newark, New York, New Jersey, Roosevelt, whatever, you know. And so they just did a grocery list, so it made it seem like they were highlighting communities throughout the metro rather than just, you know, we got to say WHTZ in Newark, but you did. All right, so that's the deal on that. Now, 888-876-5593. Johnny is in Austin, and he was in radio in the 60s like I was. Do you ever remember a rule about a half-hour ID on the bottom?
You know, it's funny Gary brought that up, and I'm trying to remember it. I know we had to do transmitter readings twice an hour.
But that
you remember that?
Oh, absolutely. And the funniest thing there was how many operators, so to speak, would do them in advance. And I remember, great story there. The guy who owned a little chain, he had APE in Jacksonville and BAM in Montgomery, Alabama. Brennan was his last name. He walked into the Chattanooga station in the middle of the night and saw, and I don't remember if they owned GOWFLI, but whichever one it was, saw the transmitter list was filled out till like 6 in the morning. And he goes into the guy and says, "You're a psychic. It's a miracle." You know? So. Yeah, I remember transmitter readings very well. Yes, but I don't remember ever having to ID. I would usually jingles and the like and all that, but I don't remember a firm regulation about a bottom of the hour ID.
I think that's funny because when Gary brought that up, I was thinking back and I'm like, I believe we did.
Well,
it's funny when I started KYOK in
65.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. It was Thanksgiving Day of 1965. They had just gotten a visit that summer from the FCC, and they cited them for some things, including, listen to this now, not saying Texas. So when I got over to KYOK, it was a big rule that we had to say, KYOK, Houston, Texas, when nobody else in the market even had to do that.
Well, I do not remember them ever requiring a state. I remember city of license. That's why.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, that's why, like I said, the HTZ with Newark, they did not want to say that. But there was no choice.
I think they were just making it hard on them. And I don't know what they cited them for. I can't remember that. But I do believe that we did have to do half-hour ideas.
I don't remember them.
Is anybody out there older than us?
That's unfortunately not much. I'm also trying to look it up through the regulations, and I just don't see it.
If that was changed, it would have had to have been in the early 70s.
Well, and if it was changed, I would expect it would come up in all these databases where they're talking about the regulations through the decades.
By the way, you had a caller earlier who was talking about FM DXing. It's funny, back in November, I was about 60 miles north of Houston in a hotel, and the guy that was running the front desk was probably between 25, 30 years old or something. And so the hotel was kind of quiet, and I got back to the hotel one night, and he was out there walking around, looking at the ground with a device with an antenna on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not shy, and I said, "Hey, Jay, what are you doing?" And he said, I'm just listening to some radio station. I said, "Are you a DXer?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, what are you DXing? And he said, "FM." And I said, "I've never met an FM DXer before."
Oh,
and this is 60 miles north of Houston. And then he said, "Come on up here to the front desk." And he pulls up all these websites and these maps and had documented all these stations that he had been pulling in for the past 5 years or something. How in the world did you get into DXing FM?
Tropoducting. That's how.
He loved it.
Yeah, no,
it was a big hobby.
It's a whole different deal. It's tropospheric ducting, and it's much better in summer than winter. And I remember the first time I discovered it, I was still in grade school, and we're living in a hotel. Uh-huh. It had a television station, and it was Saturday morning, and I turn on the station, and I'm getting stations from Houston, Texas. Well, of course, I'm enthralled. You know, what is this? And so I started...
And what year was this?
This, is, you know, obviously a long time ago. early television. Literally early television. And I was so stunned to see this, and that I started to look into that as much as you could as a kid, and discovered that both FM and VHF particularly were very susceptible to tropospheric ducting, and particularly in summer. And it was real weird. For a while I was DXing that, and what I found more often than not was on a day when it, you know, the conditions were ripe for this, I might get, say, all the stations in Little Rock. It would be area-specific,
right.
Yes. And so I remember that once driving through the District of Columbia. I was on the Beltway, and it's like 4 in the afternoon. I turn on the radio, and I've got half the stations in Tampa, and I'm enthralled. And then about an hour later, I got Little Rock, and I started to laugh because I thought, you know, if I were on the ground in Little Rock, I wouldn't listen to one of these, but now I'm just paying rapt attention. you know, and of course it will only last for a period of time, and then that's it. But yeah, tropospheric ducting, that's what it is.
Well, when I was at KFMK FM in Houston, one morning I was on from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. and about I'm guessing the 9 o'clock hour, I started getting calls from the Cayman Islands.
Yes.
I thought it was somebody pranking me.
Oh.
And so I asked one of them, I said, okay, where are you calling from? He said, I am working at the Hyatt Regency at the Cayman Islands. I said, can you give me your phone number?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. And still, I didn't believe it. So I called back, and by gosh, I got him. And they were not only picking us up, but they were getting other used to
this.
And doing it lasted about an hour.
Yeah, that's the way it works. That's exactly the way ducting works. And it can be a lot of fun. But yes, not uncommon at all. And it
But I didn't know that people, you know, some guy, you know, 28 years old or something would be into doing anything.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That.
No, it's a big hobby. And so, and ducting actually can cause the kind of interference you don't like for all sorts of networks, mobile networks and stuff like that. So it's not always just DXing fun. But the bottom line is, you know, how the duct works. And yeah, when the atmospherically, when a temperature inversion occurs, particularly over bodies of water, you mentioned the Cayman Islands or wide open spaces, you've got, you know, cool air being more dense than warm air and all that. And it goes into the fact that you suddenly will create a duct and you'll get all the stations from that area.
I heard one of your earlier callers talk about receiving a station from Corner Brook, Newfoundland.
Yes.
And actually, what he was probably talking about was 100.1, now called Bay FM, which was in the beginning called Bay of Islands Radio. And they have a website. And actually, I knew a couple of people that worked there several years ago. But it's a community radio station, and they got a cool website, Bay FM 100.1, and they also have a cool webcam.
Yeah, I'm looking at right now, Bay FM, and as far as the URL, it's just bayfm.ca.
That's right.
So, so yeah, looking at it as we speak. So
there's another interesting radio station in Newfoundland called VOWR.
Oh yeah,
it's AM 800.
Uh huh.
And I think it just turned 100 years old, but if anybody's into that history of some of these old AM radio stations, that I've read their story before I called you, this VOWR 800.
It's non-commercial. It's a church station.
It started in 1924.
Yeah, and it's it doesn't have a lot of nighttime power. It has about 2,500 watts, I think, but it's got more power in the day. But, of course, that 800, you know, such a wonderful frequency. If you're in the right place, you can get Radio Bonaire from the Lesser Antilles, CKLW
right.
from Detroit, and X-Rock from El Paso, all depending on how you turn your radio. There aren't many places where you'll get all three, but that's when it's magic.
I've been meaning to ask you this. Back in the mid-70s, were you paying attention when some of these record companies were doing recycled vinyl?
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. And I'm convinced on, actually it was recycled polystyrene, but I'm convinced on some of them that they got some of the labels in there. I'm pretty convinced.
They did? That's, yes. That's what I'm going to tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, I'm convinced they did. Yes, yes. I hated it. Hated it, hated it. I don't...
MCA was the worst.
Yeah, I don't think they were doing it in Terre Haute, which was the best of Columbia's pressing plants. But everywhere else, they were. And as soon as I knew it was polystyrene, I hated it right there. But yes, the recycled Lori labels like that were just terrible for polystyrene, and it got worse in the 70s.
Well, I remember clearly about Elton John, Don't Shoot Me, I'm a Piano Player. I was working for KILT-FM in Houston, and it was kind of a rock mix. I didn't like it. It was kind of a classic rock station for its day. But, you know, we were playing a lot of album cuts.
Yeah, of course.
And that MCA, man, they put out some nasty, nasty vinyl. They really did.
Well, a lot of them did. You know, and some of the pressing plants were worse than others. But like I say, I swear they got some labels in that.
They did.
Yeah.
Saw them. And you could hear it, too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
When you look back at record albums of the 60s, say, wouldn't you agree that, like, Capitol and Columbia probably had the cleanest pressings of LPs?
Depends where they pressed it. The stuff that was pressed in Terre Haute, yes. But the stuff that was pressed in Pittman, maybe not as much. It depended on the plant. And you can see in the etchings usually where it was.
And, you know, RCA had some weird stuff that was real flexible. It was
absolutely. Those were wonderful. You could melt them. You could turn them into ashtrays. But, yes. But
well, they would just like bend in your hand and not break. It was really weird.
Well, you know, and of course that was the antidote to shellac, because of course prior to the 50s, shellac was, you know, so we call them wax. I mean, those damn things, any 78 of your choice, they were inflexible to the max.
Well.
So yeah.
I've still got a lot of vinyl here, and I probably should have gotten rid of a lot of it a long time ago. But you're still holding on to yours too, though.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I'm not about to get rid of that. But the RCA had a few plants. They had one in California and one in New Jersey. But Indianapolis, Indiana was a very big plant for RCA, and there were other things. There was one in Canada too, actually. But the Matrix.
Was that the Camden label?
Well, no, Camden was the classical music label for RCA, and then later...
It was blue, wasn't it?
But later, you know, it was also somewhat of a budget label, but originally it had, you know, their classical and good music kind of things. But, you know, you can... The Matrix codes will tell you. Like, if you're looking at RCA record and it says R on it, that's probably Rockaway, New Jersey. If it says RC, it's still Rockaway, New Jersey, but it was a custom deal. And H is Hollywood, you know, I for Indianapolis. So you can see that. And the Rockaway plant, you actually, by the depth of the grooves, you could sometimes tell. But RCAC, the custom division at Rockaway, was a major contractor for other labels. And that was true for Terre Haute, too. In fact, all that Columbia garbage, like the Columbia Records Club and all of that came out of Terre Haute. And that was, in fact, RCA used a subcontract to that Terre Haute plant from time to time. And so that was the deal.
I've never saw a record pressing plant.
Well, the Terre Haute plant always had a 4th of July picnic. So when I was at Columbia Epic, I used to go to that, although the best one for 4th of July was Sam Marmaduke at Western Merchandisers in Amarillo. But yeah, the Columbia was good too. But there are still pressing plants, obviously. So, you know, if you wanted to see it. And
probably videos of it.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. But I've got pieces of the molten plastic that would become an album, things like that, you know. So found one of those.
I think you've seen about everything there is to see, Raleigh.
Well, you know, that kind of stuff. It's, you know, that it would be a molten piece and then it would spread out and all that. and under heat. And yeah, it was neat. But, you know, Terre Haute went through so much because, of course, originally it was doing record shellac and then vinyl and polystyrene. But then all the 8-tracks came out of there. And
oh my gosh.
Yes. And then they had, you know, and that's different production. Then they had to gear up for cassettes and all that, and then CDs. I don't know what they do now, but I'll bet you they're in operation. While we're speaking, I'm going to look that up, because I would think that was too big a facility that it's not in operation doing something.
Do you have a break coming up before you actually leave the show?
I forgot. Oh, my God. I'm just about over. Who knew? I don't know. I may. Hang on. Let me do it if I do on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have less than a minute, so the Terre Haute plant is closed. Oh, my God. There's a whole story there, and I don't have time to tell it, but you have time to tell us what's on tap for Sunday night.
Well, we got classic soul and R&B. If you've never heard it before, our friend Nick in Baltimore listens, and I got... We got old Fran and Gary in Austin. Listen, it's 6 hours of classic soul and R&B. It is on soulofthecity.net. If you're listening on Alexa or internet radios, the mothership station is called HoustonRadioPlatinum.com.
6 p.m. Central to midnight Central. Be there or be square. Can't wait to hear it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Good night. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You too. All right. So apologies to Bob in Virginia and Eduardo. We didn't get there. The show is over. I didn't have time to run 2020 News. So if you're a 2020 News fan and you are listening online, I'll run it here in seconds. But other than that, we thank Bob for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, thank you for calling. Talk to you Monday on WGN Radio.
Crowd Crime Crunch. Plus, senior shock shooting and doozy on the sly with diamonds. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Sticky finger warning. In New York City, chaos crashes into crowded city streets. A sensational security scare is sizzling on the Big Apple's busiest boulevards, where crafty crowd-crushing pickpockets prowl Radio City, Times Square, and Rockefeller Center, reporting ruthless raids on wallets and purses alike. Police warn pedestrians to watch your wares or wave goodbye to them. So, if you're in Gotham's gauntlet, guard your goodies. Because here, a careless moment costs more than a lousy souvenir shot. Elderly eruption. Suburban sorrow meets senior scandal when a 93-year-old allegedly shot his own spouse in a Northern California parking lot, then did the most surprising thing, called 911 on himself. Police say the aged accused simply stood still and waited as officers arrived after the deadly domestic dispute turned fatal, leaving detectives and nearby neighbors stunned and shaken. In this case, age may have brought experience, but accountability still showed up right on time. Diamonds in the rough and tumble, 47th Street in Midtown Manhattan, where the Diamond District is a hurl's best friend. Some jewelers who share a shop gave new meaning to blood diamonds when Bling Sling went swing-zing over claims of crooked carrot competition. Ice Vice Baby in a diamonds to bust smash and jab rocked the raging rivalry over riches. Two owners in cuffs, another to Bellevue, as the battle for business becomes one down and dirty swirl jam. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.